This is the MagicWordPodcast.com.
So we're on our way over to the convention center, and they're going to be starting the stage contest at about 8:15. And as you recall, yesterday, Mark D'Souza said he was not going to be there, so I've got to take some my copious notes, I guess, this morning in order to fill you in on all the contestants. But as we're walking over, I've got one of these speakers and presenters who you know and love, as we all do. Here she is, Connie Boyd. Hey, Connie.
Hi, nice to see you this morning. This was a pleasant surprise. And it's sunny and beautiful in Quebec City. Who could ask for more?
It is absolutely wonderful here. I've already walked and done about a one-mile walk and had breakfast and everything, so...
Nice.
So tell me about your presentation this afternoon or this evening.
It's this evening. I'm part of Max Maven Presents, which is a series of interviews, a lot of it having to do with historical elements. And I'm going to be presenting How Women Influence Magic. And I'm pretty excited about it. I've been researching this for over 4 months, but, you know, the Magical Woman program has been for over 2 years on the YouTube channel.
Yes. I was going to say, if people haven't already... check that out and subscribe to that. You should. You've got just a ton of content. I mean, people are telling me I've got a lot of stuff I put on the podcast. Seems like every day I'm getting something from you.
Yeah, we've uploaded over 250 videos. Many of them are actual videos with the person, but some of them are vintage videos of performers such as Celeste Evans that are rare that her daughter presented and gave to us. So we've been really, really fortunate with content and historians donating material. And it's a really important source for all magicians to just be able to see some new content and to learn from all of these really talented professionals.
Well, I'm in agreement with Kayla Drescher and Carlissa whenever they say I eventually want to have this just generically called magicians and not female magicians. I don't like that term.
Exactly. We can't deny the fact we're women and we have to adapt, you know, for our physicality.
Sure.
And that's just natural facts. But yes, and I think that we're coming close to that. In the future now, the young magicians I'm talking to, they're not encountering any of the difficulties that were previously noted.
You mean the kind of obstacles they would have had in order for entry into the men's world or the men's club, if you would?
Right. I want to say inclusivity and diversity is has been welcome. And it's thanks in part to podcasts like Shazam that have really helped to open doors and open eyes. And just socially, things are more accepted now. But I think you'll see from my talk tonight, women have been in magic since the beginning. There's just unfortunately been a bit of an omission, and hopefully we're going to correct that, and we are correcting that, and that's fantastic news.
Yeah, we really are. And it's due in no small part to your contributions, as I said, on a regular basis and your continuing basis, I should say. So thank you very much, Connie, for all you're doing.
Thank you. What you're doing. So exciting to be here.
This is a lot of fun. So for the Magic Word Podcast, that was Connie Boyd. Scotty out. Well, we're on our way over still. Before we get ready with the stage contest, you're going to hear a voice of someone you'll hear a little bit later then also who was doing my color for the past few days and will continue to for the next few days, and that's Mark D'Souza. Hey, Mark.
Hey, Scotty. How you doing?
Fantastic. So I thought we'd kind of just do a quick rundown on what happened in the shows last evening and how much fun that was.
Yeah, the concept was supposed to be a TV show, and my understanding is that the presenters were presenting it in the style that they're used to seeing in Quebec City. So it was a very Quebecois kind of thing.
Well, weren't they actually
I believe they are. Okay. Yeah, they are presenters. Yeah. So on the show, they had a terrific band, live band last night, the Rabbit in the Hat Band.
Yeah.
Did a great job. And they really tried to make it seem like a TV show with interviews
it
and
did.
Stuff.
It felt very much. They had a couch and the chair and everything over there.
Yep.
So it seemed like a late night talk show kind of a thing.
Yeah.
And then with the show, and to begin with, they had someone who was joining the Rabbits in the Hat Band who was playing on bongos.
Exactly. That was Topaz, who did a great job, as always, and did a little routine with bongos and billiard balls.
Yeah.
So that's a fun, it was kind of like a fun opening thing. And then they had Sean Farquhar come out. And did some interplay with him, a little comedy interplay, and he was interspersed throughout, and it was a fun kind of thing.
It was
but
fun.
I think a lot of the attendees didn't care for the whole TV show interview concept.
Oh, I love that concept.
Yeah, I heard from a few people today. They liked the acts. They didn't like the the presenters. Huh. But, I mean, look, it was a, you know, it was a concept show, and I thought it was fun.
Yeah.
It was fun. So the other acts on were two guys named Tana Manga, who did two spots of the show, and I thought they were superb.
Phenomenal. Not yeah. heard of them before, but I hope to see them again.
Yep. Did one particular thing with one playing a piano, and it took a piano key, which became blank cards. It was really, really fascinating thing. Yeah. But both routines were great. They had on, of course, Sean did his topsy-turvy bottle routine, which mm-hmm. you haven't seen it. That's just great. No gimmicks. I mean, it's just so much fun, though. There were a couple of acts that were supposed to be on that weren't, and I'm assuming they were, you know, because of COVID, they couldn't be here. But they did substitute some people, including Yana Felicitas, who works with Topaz, and she worked with him on the show. And she was the woman on the couch where it was, you just saw her torso and then a pair of legs. So it was like she was a half woman.
Yeah.
Half woman. It was kind of a fun thing they did.
Yeah, I noticed at the end of the evening, whenever they all came out for applause, she had pulled herself together.
Yes, she had, fortunately, and pulled herself together enough to work with Topaz on another one of his routines, which was
right.
his production of speaker cabinets.
Yeah.
One more.
Yeah,
one,
very
and
good.
Had the whole audience singing. Mark Mitral was an act I was looking forward to seeing. Mark was on America's Got Talent doing the routine with Lisa, his little dog.
Yes.
Wonderful ventriloquist that I saw it at a FISM probably 30 years ago.
I was going to say, he looked like he was a pro who had been doing this for decades.
Absolutely. Yeah, real top pro. Did a couple of ventriloquial routines, but I thought the highlight was Lisa, the talking dog, which, you know, you can see it up close, and it's really scary.
Yeah.
It looks like this dog is really talking.
Moving its mouth, yeah.
Yeah, the mouth moves up and down, and he's got, like, incredible control over this thing. And he's a very good ventriloquist. And then he did a routine with four people up from the audience, giving them different voices, and just a fun, fun thing. I mean, that was basically the show. Fun kind of thing, and we'll see.
Then we, of course, had evening conversation, in conversation with Luis de Matos and the Topaz, talked quite a bit then with about some of his creativity and his muse.
Right, and I was not there for that. I ended up kind of going into the jam sessions and hanging out with some people and talking, and then went to see Danny Dorotis, but the hour is starting to get too late for me, and I started kind of just fading out, so I figured I'll watch Danny do the show. And
there's so much to do here. I mean, it goes from 8 in the morning until 4 in the morning.
Yeah, pretty much. And there's, you know, like, it's something for everybody. And you cannot see everything in a FISM.
No.
It's physically impossible.
No.
There's so many overlapping events.
There are. Well, just like this morning, in which that you have a lecture, and people had to make a choice of whether they get to see your lecture or to watch the contest.
Exactly.
There are some people who are not as interested in the close-up as they are the stage, and vice versa, and so they can see
and
those
some
things.
People would rather just go to lectures. And
that's
some people
correct.
Never see a lecture and only go to the competitions.
And some don't ever see competitions.
Yeah.
So just go to the lectures and the dealer's
yeah.
room and everything like
yeah.
that, too.
So there's something
well, that was a lot of fun. Well, we're getting ready for the stage contest here shortly, and I'm going to be going into the room, so it's good seeing you, Mark, and we'll be talking with you soon, later this afternoon after we finish with the close-up contest.
Excellent. We'll see you then.
All right. That was Mark D'Souza. Scotty out. So, as the competition is about to begin, we got just a few moments over here. I thought we'd give a quick chat with Peter Samuelson and Chip Romero. Hey, good morning, guys.
Good morning.
This is going to be quick. Good morning, everybody.
This will be quick.
I'm barely caffeinated.
And so, the convention has been really good for you guys so far, right?
Absolutely.
It's been incredible. I've never seen anything like this in my life.
This is your first FISM, isn't it? What's amazing is not only your first FISM, but your presenter. It's amazing.
I am very, very, very honored, very humble, and very fortunate to be here on behalf of Doug Henning, the guy that revolutionized magic, brought it all back, and we're all still living in Doug Henning's world.
Wasn't that 1967? Correct me if I'm wrong. When was the TV show that...
Are you kidding me? December 26, 1975.
75.
The night that magic changed. It was like Dorothy walking through the door to Oz, and we all ran after him.
He did.
That's amazing. You... You saw the show in New York, did you? Did you come in?
I did not. No,
when I did.
Yeah, absolutely. I saw it there.
There you go.
And I saw Merlin as well. And yes, it did change the world. Absolutely. You know, it changed the world for us. It changed the world for Charles Reynolds, you know, who I got to know later on, you know. And just you get a sense of how much Doug's influence was really strong. And then he kind of vanished for this point. And yet his influence sort of continued on as it grew. And you know.
There's so many magicians, so much magic that he did on those eight specials that is still being done today. And I love it. David Copperfield said, he asked me one day about what did Doug give us from this particular special? And it was like, oh, okay, well, he gave us the mousetrap from that special, or he gave us the fire dome from that special, or he gave us the fountain levitation.
So it's kind of like Copperfield when he had like a Statue of Liberty or walking through the walls. We had like a single thing you remember.
Copperfield didn't give us the Statue of Liberty. None of us got to do that, Scott. What I'm talking about is like the Sands of Egypt or Gene Anderson's famous torn and restored newspaper.
Right. That Doug performed these and made them visible for magicians to go, oh, wow, and it's something they could do.
And inspired us to do these effects, and people still do the torn and restored newspaper today. But Doug Henning was the guy we all saw it do it first.
Yeah.
Sands of Egypt, phenomenal trick. Louis DeMatos, Charles Bach, probably the greatest Sands magician in the world. They saw Doug Henning do Sands of Egypt. And so that influence is still in magic throughout.
It was kind of funny. Here we are in Quebec, and he was from Ottawa. Is that right? Where was Doug Henning from?
Winnipeg.
So you're an American and talking about a Canadian.
Well, yeah, but I'm an honorary Canadian because I did time with CAM, the Canada Association of Magicians, and I'm very good friends with Greg Fruin and Sean Farquhar, so I'm well represented.
Yes, you are. Now, Peter, are you going to be giving a presentation here as well?
I am not. No, this is strictly sort of the busman's holiday for me. So this is my first FISM as well, and it's just thrilling to be here. It's just I had no idea kind of the level of the work. The competitions are ranging from just sort of, you know, kind of, wow, they let that get on the stage, too. This is amazing, and yeah. I've never seen something like this before. So it's true art.
There are some things that are true art.
Absolutely. Things that moved you and things that touched you in ways that you're totally unexpected by. Yeah, yeah. No.
So this being your first one, you think this will not be your last one?
I think it will not be my last one. I would love to come back again. Absolutely.
I've already registered for Italy for 3 years now. I'm 25. It should be great.
That sounds great. And that's something I'm going to run down and do right now, as a matter of fact.
I think I might do that. What you just said is perfect. And Peter Samuelson is an artist. The degree of art here is very high, and I think it's higher than any convention I've ever been to in my life. So, yeah, I'm sorry it took me so long to get to a FISM.
Because you, being a cruise guy, have toured the world anyhow, so you've been around, but your work, you might have even been someplace while FISM was going on in one of the countries or wherever like a Sweden or anywhere at the time?
I've been to those places, but no, I was real fortunate. I was in Vancouver on a cruise ship when PCAM was going on, and Sean and Lori gave me a day pass, but not a FISM. But I think I'm going to register too, because this has been mind-boggling. And what, we still have 3 nights to go?
We do.
I work tomorrow night at 11:30, and the reason they put me on 11:30 is they know I can talk for hours.
It's hard to cut you off in 1 hour.
Sleep.
I know.
Indeed. Yeah, so this has been really remarkable, Scott. And I think the biggest challenge for me has been just to be able to remember what I saw. There's so much coming at you, which is why I take notes. I know you do as well. And it's just this ability to sort of look back and just have these key moments to go, oh, yeah, this is the guy this was the man with the two balls, with a red ball and the white ball, which was
right.
Just this art history. This, you know, just remarkable.
Well, speaking of which, that Mark D'Souza, over the last couple of days, has been doing color for me. So he's been taking copious notes, and we've been talking about each act and what they've been doing and everything and putting this on the podcast. And so he is actually preparing for a morning lecture today and then an afternoon lecture tomorrow. So he's missing the stage contest now. So if you're going to be jotting notes, and I will perhaps after this is over,
Let's compare notes. Yeah, absolutely.
Okay, well, you guys will benefit from what Peter Samuelson's artistic eye and my queer eye, my strange eye, my unusual perspective would be together. See how we go. And Chip, it's always good to see you, and we'll talk some more later.
Of course we will. Yes, sir. Yes, sir.
After your presentation is over, then as well.
Looking forward to that presentation.
If I can get near you at that point, everybody is going to be saying, like you were saying, when you were on ships, people didn't know you, but then after you started doing the rest, everyone knows you. But after you do this tomorrow night, I won't be able to get near you.
Well, yeah, you will. Am I
still your friend?
Yeah. Come on, man. Why, I don't know why people treat me like this. I'm just honored to be here. And you know what? It's amazing to be recognized for just reminding people of how great a magician was.
Yeah.
That's all I've ever done. All I've ever done is just say, you know, you guys forget all about this guy. This guy did a lot for magic. That's all I've ever done.
Yeah.
And now I'm kind of being honored for it. They're like, hey, let's get this guy to go talk about him.
Yeah.
And so again, it's an honor. But I'm really glad you sat down. This was pretty cool. I particularly like our background music that we had put in, and I like the direction of this.
I hope that they let this go through.
No, thanks a lot.
Okay. Thank you, guys.
Thanks.
So it was the Magic Word Podcast. That was Peter Samuelson and Chip Romero. Until later, Scotty out. We're at intermission right now at the stage competition. And speaking of competition, we had close-up and stage just the last couple of days. And I have one of the competitors with me right now who actually has won several of the competitions for the Magic Circle, who is also featured in one of the episodes we have of the Magic Word Podcast some time ago. You can go back and look it up. Please welcome Edward Hilsum. Hi there, Edward.
Hi, Scott. Nice to meet you finally.
Yes, that's right. Face-to-face, finally, eyeball-to-eyeball, so to speak. You have attended other conventions, I guess, like in Blackpool when FISM was there. Is that right?
Yes, that was actually my first FISM in 2012 in Blackpool.
Did you go to the next one in Rimini and Italy?
I've been to all of them since. So okay. Italy, then Korea, and yeah.
Because most people think, like, after they've been to the first one, it's like, this is such an amazing event, they got to keep going, right?
Exactly that. I was bitten by the bug, and I love coming to FISM. It's a really special convention.
But is this the first one you've actually competed in?
It is. So I thought, I'd see what it's like, and I think it took me a while to get the guts to compete. But yes, yeah, so the first time I've competed on this stage.
And so now that you have competed, do you feel like you're starting to get your legs a little bit? So it's like, I think I could do this again, win or lose, of maybe competing in the future as well?
Yeah, do you know what? It was a real honor to represent the UK. It's been a while since the UK has had a contestant, which was part of the reason I really wanted to do it. And yeah, it's been an amazing experience. It's, you know, it's not the easiest stage to compete on, but I'm pleased overall how it went. And yeah, looking forward to next time, definitely.
Now, you have won virtually every award the Magic Circle has. Do you have the Devant Award also by the chance? Have you won that?
No. That's a very special award. I've won the competitions.
Yeah, but all the competitions you won.
Yes, yeah.
That's a special, that's presented by the president. Or what is the Devant? How do you get the Devant?
I'm not sure entirely. It's voted for by a committee.
Okay.
So people nominate. But that's it's for sort of a lifetime of great work.
Achievement kind of a thing.
Exactly.
I was thinking that was kind of what it was. But as for the other kinds of things, you won close-up and stage and children's, is that right?
That's right, yes.
Yeah. And so you were competing here in the close-up.
That's right. So it was a version of the act I did for the close-up competition.
About that.
At the Magic Circle. So it's parlor. It's a small stage act, but it felt like it belonged in the parlor category.
So that was a little bit different kind of a setup. Were you... Did they tell you in advance how the jury was going to be sitting, looking down on you and the audience behind them? Or did you know any of that?
I kind of knew the judges would be close and then people would be watching on a screen. But when I walked in, it was kind of a shock to see. I mean, I would imagine it's about 1,500 seats, the close-up theater.
Yeah. And just one shot. You don't do it back-to-back.
One shot. And my act is kind of a little bit risky. I live on the edge, so look, it. I like pushing the boundaries a little bit. And, like I said, I think all things considered, I was happy with.
Have you got some lessons learned or things that you can recommend to others who might want to compete in the future?
Yeah, hugely. I think overall, being as prepared as you can, and the fact there's only 10 minutes to get ready, like 10 minutes of actual technical time in the space, it was really valuable. I had Noel Britton and Will Houston, who were amazing on the day, to help me just get everything as prepared as possible to make the best use of that preparation time.
Right.
And without them, I think I would have been even more nervous.
Now, do they have lights like red, green, and yellow or something as far as you're watching and you know that, I'm almost running out of time?
Well, that was the other thing I wasn't sure exactly. There's a 10-minute time limit, and in the rules it says after 9 minutes, a yellow light will appear. But I was very relieved to see there was actually a timer so you can see exactly how long you had left, which I believe I had about 5 seconds remaining on my time.
Were you kind of sweating it out a little bit?
I was. And because my act is really dependent on the volunteer, and unfortunately I got someone that didn't really speak English. So, yeah, that, no, it's being able to see the exact time meant I just, you know, at the end, I knew I had to cut it off.
Right, right. I remember several years ago, and Woody Aragon was performing, and we were watching the timer, and people kept yelling at him, you're about to run out of time. And he went overtime, and I think was disqualified, but it was kind of like, hey, I don't care. I'm having a great time. The audience is loving it. And even if I don't win, I think I put on a good performance, which he did.
I remember that very well in this year, and that was still in the back of my mind, because what actually happened with my act was, for mainly because of this volunteer not understanding, I was having to explain things two or three times, and I sort of got to the stage where I would rather finish the act and show people what I'm doing.
Yes.
And, yeah, look, we got there just under time, thankfully.
Well, that's one of the...
I can see where that would come from for Woody, you know, after preparing for so long, just wanting to share the act. I can sort of empathize now with what
Well, that would have been good advice right there, then, certainly, to pick your volunteer in advance for someone who's going to speak your native language.
It's difficult because here you can't pick the volunteers. Oh. It's up to them. So I did ask for volunteers that speak good English, but...
You get what you get.
You get what you get, and you have to make the most of it. Yeah.
Well, it looks like I'm getting ready to the intermission to be over here. Thank you very much.
My pleasure.
And so it's a real pleasure. Great, great to meet you personally for the Magic Word Podcast. I'm Edward Hilsum. This is Scotty out. We have just completed the stage contest for this morning, and as mentioned, that Mark D'Souza is busy. He's got a presentation he's going to be giving. He's going to be missing the stage competition, but he'll be here with a close-up, I believe, later this afternoon. But sitting beside me, as you heard talking a little bit earlier, was Peter Samuelson. Hi there, Peter.
Hi there.
So nice, Scott. He'll be providing a little bit of color and along with me as we took some notes on the different performers. And in the stage contest we had to begin with from Italy was Andrea Rizzolini, I believe is the pronunciation.
That's what I've got, yeah.
And Mental Magic. So what were your comments or notes on him?
Yeah, so, you know, it was quite interesting. I think Mental Magic has a real challenge here at FISM. There's both the language issue that happens. Sometimes you have the attempt to try to get spectators to cooperate in a certain way that are unpredictable. You know, that certainly happened yesterday. That happens in there. And today, this spinning act, there was a sort of a technical glitch where this payoff at the end, which seemed to be anticipated of these phones in the audience ringing, didn't happen. So you just never know what's going to happen. And so mentalism is pretty risky. But it's interesting to see guys trying and making the effort for it. And, you know, some nice stuff. Some nice stuff.
It was nice. He had sort of had a like a 3x6 foot type of a video screen that was behind him. You know, that kind of had that matrix
thing. Vertical LCD screen that was up there.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And then he was identifying a bunch of passwords of people on their phones, and he had a frisbee thrown out. Had five volunteers up, as you said. And there's always a problem, perhaps, with random volunteers, particularly you never know who's going to be able to, even though they can speak English, as far as that being a good language for them, they may understand, but it's difficult. But I think he pushed through and did a good job.
I think
there was
so
a little glitch at the end. I wasn't quite sure
there
exactly.
There was, you know, but this idea of having the phone inside of a paper or a plastic bag, sitting on top of a glass under a plastic glass cube, and then having him sort of unlock the phone, a borrowed phone, sitting on this glass in the midst of the stuff was remarkable. I mean, there was some very strong visual stuff that
happened. It was very visual.
Yeah.
Next from Russia was Vadim. Yeah. And this was a comedy.
It was a sort of interesting. The most interesting thing is this use of a hidden hand in the midst of this stuff, because he walks out and it's a picture of his. He's got a picture of his girlfriend, and he's clearly not had a good experience with her because his arm is in a cast and a sling.
I guess that gives new meaning to the word breakup.
Yes, indeed. Exactly. It did. But it was really delightful. There was lots of really fun use of that idea of this invisible hand that happens in there, you know. And at one point, there was this great moment when the cast itself detaches itself from his body. The sling becomes like a hoop and passes entirely over the floating arm. It was just, you know, hands would appear and disappear. It was quite interesting and funny. So,
It was very fun. Yeah. Taking advantage of that kind of like a daylight seance.
Yes, exactly.
In a way. Because the way that he was doing a zombie kind of a thing to begin with a balloon or something in the top hat, and then holding half part of it with his teeth in the other hand. It was funny. It was very good. Very clever idea, I thought.
Yeah. I mean, I think throughout the morning there was this contrast between some pieces that are, you know, very clever, that have these moments of real cleverness, and others that are fully realized. And that's sort of the difference that you see
good
in
point.
This.
That's really
you know?
Good point. Yeah, there's some things, yeah, exactly right. Like yesterday, there was a fellow who was, had a thing with a buzzsaw. I think there were some ideas in there, but it wasn't fleshed out. You
exactly.
know what I mean?
Exactly. And the wrenches would appear in his hands, and so it was a nice manipulation with wrenches, you know, open-ended, box-ended wrenches.
Yeah. Next was H.J. from
Taipei.
Chinese Taipei, with general magic and invention.
Yeah, so very interesting, and I think the invention is really appropriate. He appears inside of a frame and a picture on a wall, a picture of the Magritte.
Like in a museum.
The classical image of the guy with the apple floating in front of his
called
face.
Called Son of Man.
Son of Man, exactly right. And very interesting that he's got this, like, the voiceover. Imagine you go into a museum and you're listening to the description of the paintings that you're looking at. Mm-hmm. And so the voiceover that comes on talks about that this is the... a magician who is in search of a perfect trick, but unfortunately his act is boring, is what the thing happened. And so the artist comes alive, and the picture comes alive as this character who keeps trying to make things less and less boring. And he actually starts to think outside of the box, beyond the frame, so to speak.
Well put.
Exactly. Where he breaks that frame, that fourth wall, you know, of the... You know, that flat two-dimensional frame that's around there. And things started to emerge beyond the frame to this point where he had this great idea of where if he dropped something in the picture and it dropped outside of the frame, it would reappear from above. So if
inside
he dropped
the frame,
a ball inside the frame. Yeah. So he drops it, it goes out of sight, and then drops back into the sight. And he played with this idea in a really nice way, going both left and right, as you pointed out when we were discussing it afterwards. So if you push something out the left side of the frame, it would reappear on the right side, and timing it nicely. So there was a lot of really nice invention on that.
It looked really great in 2D when you're watching it on the big screen monitor, and then you look over and see it in 3D, and then you're talking about breaking the fourth wall. Boy, it had it all in there, I thought. Very clever, very well worked out. It was flawless. I really didn't see anything where he had any problems or anything. And then towards the end, when he was dropping some balls on the floor, and then they were slowly coming out from the top, basically falling... Like, I can't remember the other one, where you have the guys with the umbrella, the other Magritte, where there are several of them, like raining men, basically, kind
exactly.
of thing. Except,
or where he's dropping things in sequence, and they come down, and they were in slow motion.
Yes.
But everything sort of staggered, so it flows. And again, we've sort of talked about this idea that things are not... It doesn't look like they're on thread because there's no wobble. So it seems things seem very stable and solid.
Yes, good point. And it was something that it came full circle. It began with Son of Man with the apple over his face, and then at the end, the apple slowly descending over his face.
Correct.
And then blackout.
But really lovely costume, and finely produced, even his makeup.
Oh, that's true.
Was really well done.
Looked like it was painted on.
Exactly.
With his brush strokes.
Exactly.
Next was... Cody Stone. Yes, from Germany, with General Magic.
Yes. Interesting idea. I mean, this is something that's sort of come to popularity, the idea of the Alexa or Siri trick that sort of leads you through this effect. Mm-hmm. So he produces his assistant, which is a Siri column that happens out of that, and then it starts to interact with this. There's a production of a drone that happens in there that sort of flies out, and he controls it. There's this moment where there's the spinning technology. So our buddy Hal Myers, if you remember, years and years ago, had
Damien.
Damien had the Skyliner that he and Dean Cern created and put out, whereby it looks like a New Year's Eve noisemaker, where you spin it on the end of a stick, but it's spinning around, the LEDs will spell out words. So that's
it's like a fan, basically.
Exactly. So now they've become this fan-like, so it looks like a room fan. And
well, Din Yang used that yesterday.
Yes.
Remember, with the doves and things.
Exactly. Well, these have now become popular for the spinning, like the nunchucks.
Yes.
And this sort of thing.
Right.
So as you spin it, you create and spell out images and stuff. So as a static fan, now he had this, used it. It becomes a projector for all intents and purposes
exactly.
in space.
Very cool. And then, let's see, at the end, it was basically about a story that was depending upon technology, and then finally at the end decided, I'm getting rid of that. He had the drone pick up Siri and carry it out. It's kind of like, okay, I've had enough of all that. Let's move into real life kind of a thing. You know,
pulled the drone off the spinning fan, sort of made it appear, this large jumbo drone that then flew over, picked up the Siri column and took it away on Siri's protesting, going, oh, I'm afraid of heights. I hate this. No, put me down. Let me go.
So, pretty original. Pretty funny. Yeah. Next was a Zippo. Guy Gui from Netherlands with manipulation.
Yeah, exactly. And doing iPhone starts out with this, and then it became a manipulation of emojis. Mm-hmm. So, you know, thumbs up, thumbs down, and those were relating to his moods and whether or not people liked him or liked his posts and all that sort of stuff.
Right. Started off with a phone production, and then at the end, or I guess a phone vanished and turned into the cards with the like, you know, thumbs up and thumbs down, all the emojis, and then the lighting and everything then as well. So it's just a manipulation with different kinds of cards, basically, and then at the end, coming full circle and producing the phone again.
Exactly.
Over there. Next was Antioch
and Segura.
There we go. Thank you from France. Comedy magic.
Yeah, kind of old school, right? This battle of sexes, you know, this idea of the peeved female assistant who feels put upon. It adds the French touch of this, which is that the magician, these are all, it's an older couple, and the magician is then tosses a rose out to somebody in the audience and is flirting with her throughout the show, and the wife is obviously upset about this, peeved, and this is battle of the sexes between the two of them as they both do this. But at the same time, had some interesting and fun comedic moments that were happening in this.
They did. I particularly like when they did the pom-pom stick, and that he had half and she had the other, and then pulled the pom-pom off, and then it was on a reel, basically, I guess, in her hand. So
exactly. So she comes out holding the other stick because he's complaining that she's only given him one stick, and she hands him the stick, but she keeps the pom-pom on the end. So the stick has nothing to it. So he's got one with a stick, and then so she pulls the little tassel in her hand down, and his goes up, so it's just in her hand.
Very funny.
Nice stuff, yeah. And there was a floating that happened behind the curtain. And there was this production numbers. It sort of leads up to these big productions with flowers appearing. And
that's right. Sparks
go off. Smoke. Right, smoke pots and whole thing.
So, confetti. Yeah. Reminded me a little bit of Les Arnold and Dazzle.
Yes.
Had some aspects of that.
Yeah.
Next was from Argentina, Larry doing mental magic.
Yep, Larry Flasona, is that what it was? It was hard to tell. It looked like they had the...
Flasoma was the sponsoring organization.
I don't know.
He won the Flasoma.
Okay. Okay, terrific. So, yeah.
He just goes by Larry.
So, mental magic there, and very sort of direct and powerful mentalism.
Very direct.
This. Yeah, I mean, using serial numbers and apparently divining this from people selected from the audience, I was completely baffled by it.
That's
exactly the right word. Yeah, jinx on a malted. There we go. So I looked at the stuff, and he had three guys he had seated, right?
Yes.
And then one person was helping him. He begins with, pulls out a series of bills of different currencies, has the guy select one, which seemed to be a completely fair selection for this sort of stuff. At the same time, the three guys that are seated, am I on the right ones here?
Yep, because they had the book test then.
Exactly.
As well, in which that all the numbers that were totaled up totaled the number on the bill, I believe.
Correct. So we had the three guys that were seated in the chairs write down small numbers on the pieces of paper. He very cleanly collected them, like on a clear glass,
right.
Little...
plexiglass tray.
Exactly, a little tray. Had them put them on there, and he only put his fingers on top. You could see this just to hold them, keep them from flying off.
Right.
You know, and then hands them
and
over.
And also to keep them down so it didn't look like he was doing a peek.
Exactly. And then he had the guy who was standing who'd selected the bill that was hanging around his neck, open up the papers, confirmed that the numbers were the numbers that the people had given them, and those were then written down on a large pad. He used a spray can to paint them.
Oh, that's
up
right.
There. Is that right?
Yep.
Am I right about that?
Yes, he did.
Exactly right. And then they totaled the numbers on this, and he wrote down that number. And then, interestingly enough, the bill that was around his neck had a serial number that matched the number that was created out of these three people just coming up with numbers.
Right.
And it was very direct. He also confirmed that none of the serial numbers on the other bills
were the same.
Were the same.
Right.
So there was no way that they could have chosen just any bill and it would have matched.
And that was just one of three predictions. The other two were equally good as well. And
exactly.
You had something that was, the second
a book
one was
test,
Eagle.
Right, that happened on there, right? So the three books that were out there, somebody named the number, they turned to a page number. The other two, he chose one of the three guys, and... Right. So
right.
Then,
that's right. Because he said to the others, right. He said, "You're not. You know, you're."
What's the name? What's the word on your page number? And the
right.
guy said the name. And they weren't there.
Because to begin with, his prediction was a predatory bird or something. And he said, "Okay." The fellow who was standing, he said, "Don't answer what your word is." But they had the other two people seated, and they
correct.
Verified that it had nothing to do. It was not related. But the guy who was standing, his word was eagle.
Correct. And it was eagle. So
yeah.
That clearly his pre-print prediction. Match this and seemed to be completely free choices for this sort of stuff.
I thought so.
And that there were no outs, so it was like there wasn't a multiple out situation.
That's right. Mm. Then the third one, the third prediction that he did, it was something.
It was a feeling. Had people write down a feeling, correct? Wasn't that what it was? Or a sensation that happened on that? And that one was the word illusion.
That's right. It was illusion. I'd forgotten how the deck ended
right.
up. But the
again,
total,
very cleanly with the papers that were there, and the guy picked up one.
But the total that he had, the acronym, and also the number, by the way, ended up being like 720-1969.
Correct.
Which was the, said, I don't know if this means anything to you. And then he showed that it was the...
Neil Armstrong's landing of the Eagle, where the Eagle has landed.
Yeah.
And you saw that the first letters of the predictions that happened in there spelled
Neil.
Neil, and the song that was playing was Louis Armstrong.
Right.
And so you had
Neil
Armstrong.
Exactly.
And Eagle. So it was like this multiple prediction. I felt like this combination at the end wasn't as powerful as the individual pieces, which is an interesting thing, that the sum was not greater than the whole of the parts. And to me, the parts were greater than the sum.
Very good point. Yeah, they turned around and he showed a picture of Neil Armstrong on the moon with the flag behind him. But so it all came together, but it's a very good point. But what I liked, it was fast, it was direct, and it was pretty powerful.
Yeah, very direct.
And so that was Larry from Argentina. Next was Elliot Hunter from the U.S. doing general magic.
Yeah, it felt almost like a throwback act for me, if I can speak frankly about this. It was a classical manipulation of cards and you know, of balls that happen.
Manipulation of cards and billiard balls, silks and cane productions, and with a giant card at the end.
Exactly. Going from this end. And nothing felt new.
No, it was well done.
It was all well done, yeah.
Good skill.
The handling, absolutely good skill on this sort of stuff. You know, we had a little commentary about costuming. You know, I think that one needs to think carefully about that. The top was like a tails coat with a vest and the whole thing, but he's wearing black jeans.
Mm, good point.
You know, and so the question is, why the black jeans? What's that choice? Is that meant to be sort of modern? And could you have maybe chosen something like black leather pants? I'm a vegetarian, so it wouldn't be me, but you could do faux leather.
Pleather.
Yeah, exactly. Pleather, exactly right. You know, but something that would make the bottom half of your costume kick, because he was wearing nice boots as well.
Yeah.
So it was like, I'm not quite clear on this.
Well, he's a young hip guy. What is he, 27 maybe?
Yeah. But, you know, good, nice manipulation. Very clean. You know, good
right.
stuff.
Well, we have two more to go here. Yep. And the next one was Javi Rufo from Spain with manipulation.
Yep, exactly. Set up as the context was a tailor who's working in his thing. He's got this white little fluffy shirt. And there's a box sitting on the side of the table. This large, looks like a Foot Locker almost kind of box that's in there. And I'm not quite sure what the relationship was to the box or why it was there, except that things were thrown in and out of it and some things came picking up. But it was a delightful little piece that happened in this where he creates this Pierrot character by producing parts. And there were ball. There was this green ball that kept coming back in, and it was almost as if something in the box, a spirit in the box, kept introducing this color green. And the Pierrot character clearly didn't want green. It wanted red.
Red. Mm-hmm.
So the red balls kept appearing and changing. So there's really this very interesting combination of manipulation. So he was doing hat juggling and manipulation with the balls that happened in there. And things were produced and bounced. And so
it was not your typical manipulation act, that was for sure.
Yeah.
There was a little bit of everything there.
Jumbo balls coming out of the hat that was in there, and they kept repeatedly coming out of different colors that were in there.
Right.
So, yeah.
And then finally, we end up with Nao Maruta from Japan in General Magic, and she had a great act at the end.
Very
the way
interesting act, right? You know, so this idea of memories, how memories of... are very important to us. So there's this moment where she's carrying a jacket across the stage, and then it sort of lifts it up, and there's a white chair that was there that hadn't been there moments ago. And then On the chair was a book of photographs. She sort of looked through these photographs, clearly a memory, and then the book, she hangs up the coat and then goes back to the book, and it disintegrates in her hands, sort of falls apart.
That's
as
cool.
These
like
memories are
almost.
Yeah, these memories are fleeting away from us, and we try to hold on to them and grab them, and it's like, so she tries to, so there's these moments of picking up the photographs and restoring one, and then more keep coming back, and there's a shirt.
A white shirt.
A white shirt that gets hung onto a hanger.
Well, to begin with, remember that she had the jacket when she first came out, and she produced this white chair from nowhere.
Correct. Yeah. And then there was this white shirt that gets hung on. Oh, there's a coat rack on the stage.
Yep,
So the coat gets put on the coat rack, and then the shirt gets hung in the coat rack, sort of, so that it faces front, and it becomes a screen.
Well, before that she was kind of floating it a little bit.
Oh, that's right. Kind of so like, there's this moment like Raymond Crowe's dancing coat. Exactly.
Yes.
It's like that. Clearly, that inspiration came from that.
With a little bit of Mop Man from Tina Leonard.
Exactly. Correct. Yeah, where the hands become part. So there's this memento, this idea that the coats and the, which returns, that Mop Man came back again later with the coat, not just the shirt. And then the shirt gets hung up and gets used as a projection screen for rear projection. So her hand would go behind there, and then you'd see things
manipulating
and happening in the shadow. And then she'd remove the hand, and there would be the object she would create, or things would happen along those lines. Yeah, very inventive, this idea of trying to capture onto the romanticism. You know, my only criticism on this is sometimes we go for these emotional moments that happen in there, but the pacing and the timing in the show doesn't crescendo and diminuendo in the same ways that the emotional moments have. So sometimes I feel like some of these acts are driven by the technical aspects of this and the magical aspect, and less on the emotional. I think that's that's where I feel like sometimes they're so close that if they could find a way to shape that, then that act becomes much more powerful because it taps in a certain way. But I thought all these were very interesting and great shows.
Yeah, at the end, eventually, the shirt and the jacket came together in that act. And so, she
and the
found her love again.
And bouquet of flowers and this memento.
All good points.
Yeah, all fabulous stuff.
A very good stage act contest here this morning. So thank you, Peter.
My
Appreciate
pleasure.
Your comments on that.
Sure.
And so
edit as you will.
I think this afternoon we ought to have some more great close-up contests
coming
about. I think
so. I'm looking forward to that
as well.
Yeah.
Well, good to see you. And this was your first FISM, as you said.
My absolute first FISM.
You're having a great time here, aren't you?
I'm completely enjoying this. It's just great.
So with the Magic Word Podcast, that's Peter Samuelson. This is Scotty Young. We just finished the close-up contest, and it was more of a marathon here this afternoon. It started at 1 o'clock, finished at 5 with a little 20-minute break in between. So there were I've got Mark D'Souza with me here. Hey, Mark.
Hey, Scotty. How you doing?
Fantastic. So it was – haven't seen you since this morning. It's really great to get back together. I know you've had quite a time. Did your lecture go well?
Went very well. Yeah, I was very pleased. Well attended, and I'll be doing it again tomorrow afternoon.
Okay, great. So let's jump into kind of some of the people, because there were, about 15 or...
There were 16 competitors today.
Oh, boy.
Yeah, it was a long session. It went from 1 to 5. And you know, and sitting all that long, they give you a little break. But boy, oh boy, you got to stand up. You got to give standing ovations once in a while.
You have to. That's right. Whether they deserve it or not.
So
first up.
The opening performer was a young Chinese guy named Li Hao, who did... He was dressed, you know, in very Chinese-looking garb, but modern.
Yeah.
And he did a routine with three red balls and a teacup. And then produces a clear teacup. And he's doing transpositions from the solid teacup to the clear teacup. And it just back and forth and back and forth. And it was just beautiful.
It was clear.
Stuff.
It was not confusing at all.
Oh, no.
And then he finished, of course, then with some water, kind of like the rice bowl.
Exactly.
Kind of
exactly. Water appears. And then he does a vanish of both of the cups and produces a large berry, because he had produced small berries before, which visibly becomes a handful of small berries, and then a flower visibly grows from it.
When I heard you make an expression.
Oh, it
you were
was,
so surprised.
Oh, yeah. It was. I didn't see that coming. Yeah. And that was great fun. He was followed by Ruby Ferrez, who comes out eating pudding out of a cup. A wild, you know, interesting character. Offers pudding to somebody. And he uses this metal cup to do what you think is going to be like a Well, you're not sure what it is, but he's got a big ring on the table, a metal ring, and he shows the ring and starts reaching through and producing Chinese coins. And then he puts them in the cup, and they change to silver coins. And it's just all sorts of things where these amazing productions of vanishes visible
right.
through the ring.
Right.
Just lovely stuff. Got a, and he had a running bit with that. There was a sign on the table that says, don't touch.
Right.
And the part that says don't keeps falling over. And a ball keeps a paper ball keeps appearing in the cup that says don't. And he throws it away. And then it appears in the cup again. And that just keeps happening through the act.
Right.
Great running bit. And it was just, it was a great, great bit, a great act where it ended up with everything he did with the cup. At the end, there was pudding in the cup again, and he started
eating
it.
The concept was kind of like, what was the one with the, where you reach through and you pull a lemon out of the...
Yeah, Zone Zero by Jerry Andrus, but a close-up
right.
version, but much more visual.
Much visual, because you only have like a ring, basically,
yeah.
as
yeah.
opposed to a piece of paper
exactly.
with a hole in it. And
exactly.
so he's reaching through, and things
yep.
are appearing and vanishing.
It's wonderful.
Absolutely wonderful.
Yeah. He was followed by Shane Cobalt, a Canadian, a wonderful card magician, did a routine with a dead cutting of four of a kind, named four of a kind, like right. in tribute
Three.
To John Scarding.
Yeah. Yeah.
And then he did four ace productions, wonderful ace transposition a la McDonald's aces.
By the way, that was from a borrowed deck. I mean, it was a brand new deck. He opened it up. And,
well, that was the dead cut routine.
Yeah, I was saying
that was
the
dead cut routine.
And then he handed the deck back out.
Exactly.
And then he went on with the rest of the routine.
Exactly, yeah.
Great.
He did Invisible Travelers with some great touches, great handlings. And it ends up that the cards, he put the cards back in the deck, and then the deck seals itself, and he gives it out to, mm-hmm. to the person. I thought there were, you know, just some technical issues concerning that, but I think the rest of the act was absolutely great. Yeah. He was followed by Mr. Triton, who did this act as if he were coming up to a table in a restaurant and having breakfast. And it was just
hat and the handlebar mustache.
Oh, yeah.
Kind of Victorian.
Yeah, very character, you know, sort of thing. But it was just
a silent act.
Silent act, but great concept of the thing. It's productions of, yeah, in a napkin ring, and a napkin appears in the ring. An egg that he puts into an egg cup and did stuff with that. It was just really cool. But the best part was, oh, he did a great production of a glass of wine. But then the menu that he had came to life.
Yes.
And it was actually a video screen in the menu. And there was a waiter there. And he had interplay with the menu where things were coming in and out of the menu, eventually pouring wine out of the menu itself.
I had to do a double take. I thought, wait a minute, that's moving.
Yeah, it was really cool. It looked kind of like, you know, the books in Hogwarts in Harry Potter.
Yes, yeah, yeah.
It looked very much like that. But the big surprise at the end, there was a transposition between he and the waiter. And so his character disappeared, and he became the waiter. And he was
in the menu.
Yeah, it was great. He was followed by Martin Eisele from Germany, who had won, I believe, Micro Magic at FISM in 97 in Dresden. I believe it was then. Might have been later. But he had an amazing card routine that justified... It was one of these things where somebody names any hand they want. Mm-hmm. And he and they shuffled the deck. He was a borrowed deck, which he had shuffled, genuinely shuffled. And he spreads it out on the table, and he says, name any hand you want. And he picks up, and he deals, and says, what hand do you want it dealt to?
Yeah.
And he deals it. It's just absolutely astounding. And then from a shuffled deck, performs Simon Aronson's shuffleboard.
Yeah.
It was just...
And that was for invention, I think, too, wasn't it?
Yeah, yeah. And I kind of know what's going on there. And,
yeah.
And, boy, it's clever and still incredibly complex, technically.
Was that the one where they had the picture, the photo? The video?
No.
Okay,
no,
we're
no,
coming
no.
to that.
No. He was followed by Daniel Moriwama, I believe it is, from Spain. This is one of those acts that you kind of look at and go, well, there's going to be a weak act of the day.
Mm-hmm.
This was it. It was a variety of things happening. Just seemed like real standard kind of stuff you'd see at a magic club. Until the end, where you had an Invisible Travelers with a stool on top of the table with the cards under the legs of the stool
yes.
and somebody sitting on the stool.
Yeah.
And it was pointless but clever,
yeah.
I guess.
Yeah.
Followed by Miguel Ajo from Spain. Wonderful magician. We've seen this act at Fectors. It's an act with the checkers, what he calls checkers and cards, and he refers to the checkers as the queens. The checkers turn from black and white to all four colors,
yep.
And now the cards become colored backs. And he does, again, like a McDonald's Aces kind of routine with colored cards. So you're seeing both the fronts and backs are changing. So it's really very clever. At the end, the deck becomes a rainbow, and his black and white tie and handkerchief become rainbow colored. So it's a lovely theme act, really nicely done. Just a good act all together. He's followed by Ed Ripley. Again, good vector guy. He's been winning all kinds of awards. I think he won SAM this year.
He also was in Penn & Teller Fool Us.
Yes.
Well.
Yeah. With a completely different thing.
Oh, sure.
But Ed's been doing this act for a while, and every time he comes out with it, there are improvements to it. Unfortunately, he was plagued with some technical difficulties that were not his doing. He had problems with his music, and that definitely throws the act off. But the act is a great concept. It's basically him doing the cups and balls in three different characters. He begins doing classic cups and balls. He does the hip-hop version and finishes with doing it as Forrest Gump. And it's a lovely act. But, you know, unfortunately, today wasn't Ed's day, and I'm sure he's upset. We had a break, and then afterwards we had Jacob Scherstrom, who did a routine with what looked like a standard cup and ball cup and a clear cup and two balls, a red ball and a white ball. And it was just miraculous stuff. These transpositions were just unworldly.
And he was just using a regular mat. It wasn't...
Oh, yeah, it didn't look like anything
borrowed
special.
Mat. It didn't look like a special black art or anything kind of a thing. And, where did they go and where did they come from?
Yeah, it was just absolutely great. It's one of those things that you have to see it. Impossible to describe, but, boy, when you see it, you'll remember this act. Really cool.
And he got standing ovations.
Standing ovation, yeah. He was followed by a fellow named Vincent, who's from Australia. I just wrote, wow. He talks about, you know, doing magic with his head and doing magic with his heart. So he begins by producing a Rubik's Cube from his head.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And then does some of the most miraculous Rubik's Cube magic I've ever seen. It was just astounding. Different than most of the stuff you've seen. And he really does Rubik's Cube stuff. Mm-hmm. So he's combining that skill with some things that aren't necessarily skill. But the Rubik's Cube was, you know, pretty much able to be handled. And then he follows it up by taking a real needle and pushing it through his hand, talking about, you know, working with his heart instead of his head. It weirded a lot of people out. And is it magic? I don't know. But it led into the combination of head and heart, which is him doing this Rubik's Cube magic with one hand while he's playing a fairly complex piano piece with the other.
Right.
And it was just...
It was really a true art.
It was. Yeah. It was. I mean, I started getting a little teary. It was really touching and miraculous. And it's like, this guy's got to have two brains.
He was using both sides and someone else's brain, too.
Yeah.
Left and right,
it was
someone
just,
else's.
It was just absolutely
And he
beautiful.
Got another standing ovation.
Standing ovation. Yeah. He was followed by Pipo Capel.
He was from Australia, I think, too.
He
right?
was from yeah. Australia. Yeah. Yeah. He was followed by Pipo Capel, who did a card routine with cards saying past, present, and future. They were blank cards that became selections. Nice routine, but, you know, it was, you know, compared to the other things we saw today.
In a regular convention, he would probably win.
Yeah,
you know.
Yeah, or at least place. But here, it's a different level. Speaking of different level, he was followed by Luis Olmedo. Oh, my God. I mean, I've seen Luis for several years now at Vectors, and he does very nice stuff. This was at another level. This was just incredible. He showed a leaf from a tree and produced four coins. Very pretty. And then the leaf becomes four cards. And he starts doing matrix work, but unlike anything you've seen. He did a progressive matrix where it's one coin vanishes and the next card is two. Covers that. Those two coins vanish, and under the next card are three coins. And finally, the last time, the three coins vanish, and move to the last one, it's four coins. And then they go back. Mm-hmm. And then he starts into other gyrations of these coins that are just... I mean, it looked like real magic.
That's what magic should look like.
Exactly. Mm-hmm. It's the most beautiful matrix I've ever seen. I've seen a lot of guys do a matrix. this was the most magical looking Matrix.
It was simple, direct, to the point. It wasn't any superfluous actions.
Exactly.
It was slow, and he got a standing ovation.
Absolutely.
By everybody, instantly.
Instant standing ovation.
He may be a contender here.
Oh, he's definitely a contender. There's no maybe. He was followed by Alec, who did this routine with labeling cards, putting labels in the cards. Mm-hmm. They're blank labels. The labels become printed with the names of the cards, and then they disappear at the end. Again, clever, but yeah. in this competition, not outstanding. But he was followed by Willie Monroe, our buddy from Spain,
right.
Who we never know what Willie's going to do. Well, Willie was entered in an invention category, and he did this thing where he had a little stage set up, and he introduced...
Well, begin with, he came out with a Rubik's Cube, and he had someone just to fiddle with it to make sure that the Rubik's Cube was real.
Yes.
And then he didn't move it. He took it right straight back, put it in front of this little stage, and then go ahead.
Right. So he put... the soundtrack introduces the Handsome Brothers, Righteous and Lefties.
Yeah.
And it's just his hands coming through the curtain doing all this. He puts the cube in a little... just a little container, you know, just a framework, mm-hmm. and he takes two blades and puts it through and pushes
you can
the
see
middle
it,
out.
By the way.
Oh, so, it's all visible.
It wasn't a box, you say just a framework, as you said.
Yeah, it's never covered.
If you hear that, sorry, in the background, they appear to be tearing down some of the stadium or the chairs or something, seating, and the. I don't know what they're doing. Sorry.
It's loud.
I apologize for that.
So, he does a zigzag with it and shows the cube is still moving. You know, it's still a regular cube.
And all sides, too.
Absolutely. Yeah, and he takes it out and has it looked at again. And it's, for all intents and purposes, it's a real Rubik's Cube. And then he does a levitation with it. Mm-hmm. And he finishes by taking another box. It's not a framework. It's a regular box. It opens up, and it has a triangular Rubik's Cube. And he does metamorphosis with a square cube and a triangular cube. Really clever act, but I think he may be a contender for invention. Really
right.
Very, very clever stuff. And Willie's.
And then he gave out the cube at the end.
And he gave the cube to the spectator at the end. Yeah, and there were no switches, not that we could see. He was followed by Joseph.
Oh, we forgot also about it floating.
Yo, I said that he did a levitation with it.
Yeah.
Yeah, past the hoop and everything. That was the least impressive part to me.
If he just did that, he probably.
Yeah.
It was very impressive because it was. He showed there were no strings. I mean, it was amazing using that ring. Anyhow, go ahead.
He was followed by Joseph Vidal, who did a really lovely routine with a wonderful presentation where he talked about how he practiced cards in the dark. So he learned to do playing cards. He learned to do card magic by feel. And he shows a blank deck so you can't see it, and then they become printed. But he has four more blank cards that he has signed, and he has them put in the deck, and he locates those four signed cards. Very entertaining fashion. He does it blindfolded to show that he's in the dark. And the last one, he lifts the blindfold, and the card is folded under the blindfold in his eyes.
Yeah.
So it was a nice routine. Again, you know, in a normal competition, he would be a winner.
Yeah.
And finishing with Juan Colas. Juan did a really interesting routine with a little sponge ladybug that moved in ways you couldn't believe. It was not a levitation, but it was an animation. And it was really nicely designed, a lot of variety in the movements.
Just for perspective, by the way, the ladybug was the size of about half a sponge ball, if you'll think of it
exactly.
That way.
Exactly, so half it was something a standard-sized sponge
ball. As opposed to if you're thinking like a ladybug, most people think of a small thing, but this was a larger thing.
Yeah, so. And it was a large matchbox that it went in and out of and moved the matchbox. It was just a really clever routine, lovely way to end the day. And that was like 16 competitors in 4 hours. That was a lot of magic to watch.
A lot of stuff going on and a lot of really great quality that, as Mark had mentioned here. So it looks like we have some real contenders again that we saw today. So
Yep. It's
going to be two more days of
competition? Well, it's one more day of close-up, two more days of stage.
Okay. And then we will have the announcement of the winners
Saturday.
On Saturday night. That's
exactly.
Right. Well, tonight we're going to be having a banquet. I'm going to the banquet tonight, and
right.
You are color-coded for tomorrow night.
Exactly. So tonight we get to see Danny D'Ortiz's one-man show,
okay.
Which we always look forward to, Danny.
And then followed by the gala.
And then the Mysterious Gala will be after that.
And I believe John Archer is emceeing that show?
I'm not sure.
I think I saw that on the
That'd be lovely.
We will talk about that later.
John Archer.
Okay. So for the Magic Word Podcast. Thanks, Mark.
Thank
Kevin
you,
Mark
Scotty.
And Susan. Scotty out. So the banquet has begun here, and the banquet is for people, well, it's for everybody, all the registrants. They have a banquet on Thursday night, and depending upon your color badge, there's one on Friday night. And opposite of the banquet, if you're not attending the banquet, then you can watch Danny DeOrtiz's lecture, or performance, actually, one-man show. So I'm here with one of the dealers, and right now from Card Shark, Roger Nico. Hi there, Roger.
Hi, Scott. How are you doing tonight?
Nothing less than fantastic now that I'm here with you. I love spending time with you and Mandy. It's great. Or Eva. Did she go?
Yeah, she does go by Eva May.
Okay.
Yes.
What does she prefer?
Today.
Okay.
Eva May.
Okay.
Yes.
So very good. So tell me, I know that a lot of the dealers, like half of them, didn't show up. Is it because of?
Well, half of them didn't show up because there was a problem with the Arrive Can entrance material that they either forgot to fill in or didn't fill in. And then the other half were actually from China. And if they had contracted COVID here, if it tested positive when they entered China again, they would have to quarantine for a month.
4 weeks.
Four weeks, yes.
Wow.
Yes.
So there was a problem with the RiveCan app itself? Then of them
no,
getting
well,
in,
no,
just,
they
just couldn't
they,
complete it.
Either they didn't know that they had to fill it out.
That's crazy.
Or they just didn't read it. You know,
it's an easy thing, and so, we all did that. Most of us, or we wouldn't be here. We had to be here.
Well, we're all travelers. You and I are travelers.
Well, that's right. You got a good point. There are a lot of people who are not international travelers, and so aside from that, I would think it'd be to your benefit because you have fewer competitors.
Well, what it's done is it brings down the energy in the room.
Yeah.
You know, it does bring down the energy. So what we've done is we've condensed our dealer room. We've put in more tables and chairs so that people could jam.
Cool.
We've talked the organizers into bringing the bar as well as the little cafe cart down into the dealer room.
Good.
So it'll be drawing more people in. Because, to be honest, we see the same people all the time in the dealer room. And then when we go in to see the shows, we see people we've never seen at the whole convention, even though we've been here for 3 days.
Yeah.
So.
Yeah. I had wondered about that. I mean, it seems like when I was down there, it's like, hey, Scott, again. You know?
Right, yeah, exactly. Like I said, you know, we're seeing the same people pretty much most of the time.
So, Roger, tell me what's new. What have you guys brought that's exciting here to FISM?
Well, I brought my the new Sword of Za'atar, which is a coin penetration. Then we've got, of course, the Destiny deck, which is new. We've got a new item from Boris Wilde. We've got a new one from Mario Lopez as well, which is a takeoff on the card warp, where the card actually not only does it turn inside out, but it also changes color back on the backs.
Well, he was giving a lecture or a performance here.
Yeah, he did. Yeah, he did both, and he actually lectured on the new card trick called the. Perro Verde.
Perro Verde.
Yeah,
so is that Perro
dog.
Mean dog?
It's
green dog.
Green dog, yeah.
Okay.
Yeah.
Because if it's got two R's, it's perro, it's a dog.
Yeah.
But perro means butt.
Yeah, it's perro. Yeah, it's perro. Yeah. Yeah.
So you have.
Well, luckily you're from Texas and
I speak
a little bit.
Bilingual,
yeah.
A little bit, yeah. So are you. Have you already signed up? Are you going to be going next time to Italy?
Actually, we probably are going to be going as tourists.
You're just going to come and hang out?
We're just
going to
come and hang out in Italy.
No, that's funny. Why?
So, yeah.
I still don't know how that happened.
Why?
We want to enjoy the convention as opposed to having to work.
Be behind the booth all the time.
Yeah, behind the booth all the time, yeah.
There's
exactly,
a lot to say. I've never been to Turin, or Torino, Turin. What is it?
Oh, gosh.
Whatever. So that's where we're going to be having the next one. So I've not been there. And last time, my wife and Trixie and Mark and I had gone, and we spent like a week before. So I want to do that again.
Yeah.
And Dick Olson travels with me. His wife had passed just a few months before mine. So that's why he and I roomed together. We travel like we went to Paris together. So we'll probably, and he just signed up. So the four of us probably will do that again early, you know.
Yeah, we'll probably, Eva and I will probably be going. And Christian will probably be going with his girlfriend.
Yeah.
So
Well, that's great. Has there been something that you have seen at any of the shows? Or you miss all the contests and everything, or because you're behind the booth, right?
I'm in the dealer dungeon.
Yeah, okay. Well, I didn't think you could give me much of more of a perspective than from your myopic view behind the booth, basically. So.
Yeah, I'm in the dealer dungeon. I don't see much. Last night's show, I did see last night's show. And it was very interesting. I found it very very entertaining.
Yeah.
It was different.
It was having a television theme.
Yeah, like a television theme. Yeah. Television shows.
Well, thank you also for letting me chaperone your wife this last week when we were here a little bit early, and so we got to go around to shopping and to go to the bars and whatnot.
Yeah.
So while you were setting up your booth, I guess.
Right. Yeah, we were setting up the booth on Sunday.
Yeah, that's when we got here.
Yeah, and then
it was a nice bus tour. Are you going to stick around for another day, or?
No, we're flying. We're flying right back on Sunday.
Okay, I'm going to leave on Monday.
So we arrived on Thursday. So we did Thursday, Friday, Saturday, and
well, glad you're enjoying it. I'm glad things are going well for you. That's great.
Yeah, everything's good.
That's great. So for the Magic Word Podcast, that's Roger Nico with CardShark.com.
It's card-shark.de. Because it's a German company.
Like Deutschland.
Deutschland, yeah.
Got it. This is Scotty.